the eldest continued. One of the lost dragon's fangs, or an artifact of some other territory. How about a sword from Ragnaros? Simon said. One cut is always lethal.
A fragment of the Crimson Vault? The eldest asked, sounding surprised. Perfection. But for it to truly belong to Valinor, you must take it in battle.
That would be my pleasure. The eldest placed a sleeve on the face of the mask, which began to shine as though it had been placed under a full moon.
Then, under those conditions, I grant you this new power. However, you must remember one thing. This will not last long. The Incarnation is a part of Valinor, in ways you couldn't dream. He will sense this mask, and before long he will be able to summon it from you. You will die.
Simon watched the mask glow. The eye slits flashed blue-white once, and then dimmed. Defeat him before he can take the mask from me. Understood. How do I kill him?
It is difficult to kill an incarnation, the eldest responded, and it leaves a dangerous gap, making it more likely for another to take its place.
With the mask grasped in one sleeve, he held it out to Simon.
I would try and trick him back here, he concluded.
After he paused a moment, he added,
Good luck, son of Calmon. I think that I like you, and I do not want to see you die today.
Simon slipped the mask into one of his cloak pockets, hurrying out of the workshop. Alyssa must have left at some point during the conversation, because she was no longer standing by the door. He started summoning Azura before he was fully in the entry hall, already reaching through her to cut open a gate. To his surprise, he almost impaled Andra. She stood with her blonde hair pulled back and tied, wearing a simple outfit of a loose-fitting shirt and trousers. She wore her dragon's fang, much shorter than his, buckled on a belt, and her advisor floated over one shoulder. He looked like a ghost made out of black yarn, with buttons for eyes and a wide-stitched mouth.
Watch it,
Andra said, jumping out of Azura's way. Her advisor, Manyu, drifted over to Simon.
You seem, in quite a hurry. May I ask where we're going,
We? Simon asked, startled. He looked from Andra to the other person in the room, who was buckling on his sword belt. Erastes had been a member of the Damascan army, so it was fitting that he wore a soldier's uniform. He didn't wear the red and gold of the royal army. Simon wasn't clear on the details, but it looked like only the soldiers under the command of the royal family were allowed to wear the red and gold uniforms. This uniform was mostly blue and gray, with a cap-like helmet and a coat of chainmail over the breast. It would normally be decorated with the colors of whichever overlord currently commanded the soldier, but Erastes had no decoration. As it was, the steel gray of his armor matched his hair and eyes. He loosened his sword in its sheath, giving Simon a glimpse of mirror-bright Tartarus steel.
Olyssa told us that you're working for the overlord in Diriel now, Erastes said, his voice as flat as ever.
And he was here in the house, Andra exclaimed. I saw him. Is he really a Valinhall traveler?
Yeah, he's a Valinhall traveler, Simon responded. And I'm working for him, for now.
Unwilling to waste any more time, he raised Azura and began cutting open a gate.
Then you made the right decision, Erastes responded. We're coming with you.
That didn't sit well with Simon, but he couldn't turn down help. Still, he wasn't sure he could trust Erastes and Andra to fight without slowing him down. I won't have time to look out for you, Simon warned, and we'll be stepping into the middle of a fight.
You're fighting with the Damascan royal army against Enosh aggressors? Erastes asked.
That's one way to put it, yes, Simon said.
I have trained for this day my entire life. It has nothing to do with you. This is my job. And Andra's a traveler now, isn't that right?
Proudly, Andra rolled up her left sleeve and showed Simon the black chains.
Just yesterday, she said triumphantly.
Congratulations, Simon responded, though his voice probably fell a little flat. The gate was almost open now, and the sounds of battle were deafening. From what he could see,
The entire nearby line of tents seemed to be aflame.
"Remember what we discussed, Andra," Orastes said.
"Yes, sir," Andra responded, for once sounding completely serious.
Azura touched the floor, and the gate snapped open. Simon strode through, leading the way, with Orastes and Andra following. Now, all he had to do was find Kai.
Then he had to find and fight an immensely powerful, insane avatar of battle with the strength of an entire territory, somehow tricking him into the one place he would never choose to go. But Simon liked to cross one bridge at a time.
Kai held a sword in each hand, but they both shook. It was a miracle that he had even managed to keep hold of them. His body was covered in sweat, and his breath came in heavy gasps. Every power he could draw, every force he could summon, had been long exhausted. It took all his concentration to keep holding back the poison from Ragnaros, and the wound in his back felt like someone was driving a new red-hot dagger inside, twisting every second. Valen stood over Kai, his black and silver eyes as emotionless as machines. He barely looked like he was breathing at all.
"We can call this my win," the incarnation said. "Now, lead me to your king."
Kai couldn't help it. He started laughing. It was thin, exhausted, wheezing laughter, and with every chuckle a new bolt of pain shot through his back, but something about it felt incredibly freeing.
"Don't make me kill you, Kai," Valen said. "I've earned this."
With the last drops of steel in him, Kai launched forward and struck at the incarnation's chest. Effortlessly, he swatted Kai's attack away, but Kai's momentum carried him close to his former master's face.
"Poor lost wanderer," Kai whispered. "That's not how the real world works."
The Valenhal incarnation kicked him away. It was almost gentle as these things worked. Valen could just as easily have put his foot through Kai's ribs. In this case, Kai tumbled backwards to land in a heap on the dirt.
"Then I have wasted my time with you," Valen said. He blurred as he moved toward Kai, drawing on some of that nigh speed.
He pulled Mithra back, barely paying attention, likely planning to slit Kai's throat as an afterthought.
"Well," Kai thought, "at least I stalled for a while."
Kai let himself relax. He was full of regrets. In fact, he wished he had lived most of his life differently. But somehow, none of that mattered now.
He wished he could have seen his little ones one last time.
The Valenhal incarnation pulled his sword back for a swing, ready to slash through Kai's body. Then he stopped, staring in front of him. Kai turned on the ground to see what had delayed his execution. Simon stood there, his black Nye cloak falling around him. He was flanked on either side by a pair of fighters, one a girl, younger even than Simon, wielding a dragon's fang.
"Oh, she must be that new traveler girl," he thought.
Agnos, he thought her name was. He had met the family on a few occasions, but they had never made much of an impression on him. He had never expected the girl to make it, but there she was, with the chains crawling up her arms. Truth be told, he had never expected Simon to make it either. She currently had her dragon's fang buried up to the gullet in the throat of some flaming black lizard thing from Naraka. She barely made a face as she slid its body off her blade and turned to face the next threat, a nine-legged crab with spinning blades for mandibles and a shining steel carapace. On Simon's other side, the soldier spun and danced with his shining sword of Tartarus steel. He would make an excellent Valenhal traveler. Kai regretted that he had never learned the man's name. Simon himself held Azura in one hand and Kayla in the other, letting Kayla's lovely dress wrinkle in the worst manner. He ignored the battles behind him, walking up to the incarnation. No, to Kai. He knelt and delicately placed Kayla in Kai's arms.
"Hold her for me," Simon said, trying to smile.
Kai nodded, too choked up to speak. His wish was granted. Now he could die with one of his precious little ones in his arms. though he wished that he didn't have to watch Simon die as well. Simon pulled something else out of that cloak of his, a water skin. Kai almost gasped. Maybe, if that was what he thought it was, maybe he could be saved after all. I don't have time for this, Valen said. He thrust Mithra straight at Kai's chest. Mithra met Azura in a clash of sparks. I've fought you before, young dragon, the incarnation said. Stay out of my way. Simon held Azura against the incarnation's blade with one hand, and with the other he reached into his cloak one more time. He withdrew a mask. Why don't we try again? Simon said. He pressed the mask against his face. The eye slits flared briefly with white light, and the mask stuck to Simon's head without any visible means of support. What is that? Kai whispered. As he had hoped, Kayla answered him. Something new. Once again, when Simon called power through the mask, it felt simultaneously like waking up and like trying to inhale a blizzard. His lungs practically froze from the nigh essence, and he wouldn't be surprised to learn that he was leaking light with every breath. His muscles pounded with the strength of cold steel, and he could barely feel the chains snaking up his arms. The world seemed to crystallize. A diving white eagle from Avernus paused with her claws an inch from the skin of a blue-skinned Helgard giant, which had its icicle club poised to smash one of the Nye into the ground. The flames looked like jagged orange spikes, and puffs of dust hung in the air like they had gotten stuck on a canvas. Time's not moving fast, but it is still moving, Kayla warned him. You've got to finish this quickly. In response, Simon pushed himself forward, launching like a crossbow bolt. He slammed into the incarnation with Azura's edge, putting the weight of his body and all his strength into the blow. Cutting into Valen's skin felt like trying to saw through a boulder, but Simon could not be stopped. The blow didn't slice Valen in half, as Simon had somewhat hoped, but it knocked him into the air with a bloody slash across his bare chest. As soon as the incarnation's feet left the ground, he began to drift, and Simon didn't give him a second to recover. He had no doubt that Valen could draw on just as much Nye essence as he could. So he jumped over the incarnation and reversed his grip on Azura, driving the sword down at Valen's face. He met Mithra instead. Valen knocked Simon's blade aside, now moving equally fast. His face, beneath the dark chains, was both stunned and furious. "How are you?" he began, but Simon wasn't about to let him finish. Simon focused the Nye power through his mask and moved even faster, slamming the hilt of his blade onto Valen's forehead, then ducking underneath the incarnation's still floating body and driving his blade upward. "Duck," Kayla called, and Simon obeyed instantly, dropping almost prone as Mithra's edge passed through where his head used to be. Valen twisted in midair, his momentum still making him float. But now he was drawing on enough Nye essence to speed him up to Simon's level, because he launched a series of attacks that Simon only blocked with Kayla's help. Then it was Simon's turn to attack, and he slammed Azura into Valen's blade with such force that Valen was blasted forward. Simon loosened his grip on the Nye essence to watch the event at something approaching normal speed. The Valenhall incarnation hurtled through the air at blistering speed, his passage tearing the air apart behind him. He ended by crashing into the trunk of a tree almost 100 paces away, shattering its trunk. The top half of the tree toppled to the ground. "That went better than I expected," Simon noted. "No time for that. Move now." Tightening his focus on the Nye's cold breath and building up another surge of steel, Simon dashed off after the incarnation. Chapter 21. The End of a Dragon. Alan was glad he'd worn the armor. It was heavy, hot, and absolutely no good if he wanted to sneak up on anyone, but he felt as though it had made the difference confronting the Grandmasters.
Grandmaster Avernus had been most apologetic when she realized that Alan had been left out of the decision-making process, and had seemed happy to include Alan from then on. In fact, when she had received a message from Overlord Lysander telling them that the time for their strike had come, Alan was among the first to know. Along with Galad, Grandmaster Naraka, and about a dozen other travelers of various stripes, Alan followed Grandmaster Avernus through the titanic forests of her territory. The trees were so vast that he could scarcely believe they were trees at all, the lowest branches seeming a mountain's height above them. He barely went 5 seconds without seeing a bird of one kind or another. Sparrows chittered as they flew through the air, projecting their happiness directly into his mind. Eagles soared overhead, their calls causing half the travelers to look around for danger. Tiny, two-legged birds with stumpy wings squawked as they scampered through the underbrush. The entire forest seemed alive, and practically every living thing Alan saw had feathers. Grandmaster Avernus, after an hour or two of conversing with the owl she had on one shoulder and the raven on the other, finally managed to pinpoint exactly where they were supposed to come out. Once she did, she turned to address the group.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I trust you all to know your roles, but I would like to describe the situation. We will find ourselves outside the Damascan camp, slightly south of our city. Our comrades are risking their lives to keep as many travelers distracted as possible, so we should have little difficulty locating Air Talos at the rendezvous point, which I will indicate. We are to proceed to that point and enter the gate to Ragnaros as soon as possible, without waiting to engage any enemy force that does not directly threaten us." She paused, primly adjusting her clothes, as if to give them time to ask questions. No one did.
"Very well," she said.
She pulled something out of her pocket that Alan couldn't see, and a white-bordered gate swirled open over the forest floor. The sound was what Alan noticed first. It sounded like two thunderstorms hitting each other with clubs the size of mountains. He resisted the urge to clap his hands over his ears, though Galad did so. Grandmaster Naraka frowned at him, seemingly unconcerned by the noise. On the other side of the gate was a sea of white tents on a huge rocky plateau. He could see patches of grass here and there peeking out among the tents, but the vision was spoiled somewhat when the tents were on fire and crawling with monsters. A giant, probably from Helgard, judging by its skin, roared and flailed around among the smoke, while a six-winged dragon fluttered ominously overhead. The fighting Damascan soldiers, at least the ones he could make out at this distance, seemed to be fighting smaller creatures, or occasionally what looked like their own shadows come to life. Grandmaster Avernus led the way, a pair of ravens circling her head like vultures. Alan followed. As he stepped through the gate, a nearby tree cracked in half. The sound was like a lightning strike next to his ear, and he jumped back, summoning a globe of golden light on reflex. The top half of the tree fell over deceptively slowly. It was far enough away that it didn't threaten anyone in his party, and tore off, crashing to the ground. Something dropped from the center of the tree. It looked like whatever had struck the tree in the first place. Was that a man? He hit the ground in a crouch before drawing himself up to his full height. His body was wrapped entirely in the shadows of chains, and he held in one hand a long sword with a core of gold. His sword looked almost like Simon's. The figure turned to look in Alan's direction, and even from that distance, Alan could see his black eyes.
"Move!" Grandmaster Avernus called. "Eliadel, move now!"
The rest of the travelers were hurrying after the Grandmaster, trotting away from the black-eyed swordsman, so Alan followed them. After only a few feet, he glanced back. The man with black eyes was right behind him. Alan let out a shout and hurled the blast of golden light. It splattered across a half-healed wound in the man's chest, doing exactly as much good as if Alan had splashed his attacker with a glass of water.
"Where's the king?" the man said, speaking not to Alan but to the travelers behind him.
He's here,
Grandmaster Avernus said in an almost pleading voice.
We're certain he's here.
That was when Alan realized who, or rather what, this man was. This was the Valenhall incarnation. It was all Alan could do to stop himself from taking a step back. Where? The incarnation asked. He didn't sound angry or particularly threatening, but somehow Alan wondered how far he was from killing them all. Beneath Alan's feet, the rock twisted and formed into polished wooden flooring. The wood planks radiated out from the incarnation, turning the natural world around him into some kind of house.
Well, I...
the Grandmaster began. She was cut off by a black blur and the sound of a thunderclap. One second, the incarnation was facing the Enosh travelers and asking questions, and the next he was 10 feet away, locked in furious combat against an attacker who looked like a blob of liquid shadow. Alan couldn't even see their blades. The wind from each blow threatened to knock him off his feet, and he could hardly hear through the noise. They struck each other with such speed and power that they would clash in front of him one second, 10 paces away the next, and behind him an instant later. They seemed to be everywhere, smashing at each other with enough force to crack rock. During one of the instants when they slowed down long enough to be visible to the human eye, Alan thought he saw the attacker wearing a black and silver mask, as well as the cloak. A young, black-cloaked man with a long sword. Even beneath the mask. Simon, Alan muttered, but he couldn't even hear himself. Galad's hands seized his shoulder and pulled him away from the fight. All the Enosh travelers were running now, lest they be caught up in the battle. Alan ran after them, casting frequent glances behind him. Are we working with that thing? He wondered. He trusted the Grandmasters, well, some of them. But he was becoming less and less sure that he wanted to ally himself with any of these incarnations. If that had been Simon, then he was fighting the incarnation. That might even put him on the same side as Damasca. Alan couldn't help but wonder if Simon had the right idea. Leah arrived at the scene of the battle wearing her crown, and with her lyrial source all but tapped out. The noise of war was nearly deafening, and the scene was madness. Travelers called powers against soldiers, who fought against chain-wielding shadows, who tried their best to strangle summoned beasts, who killed other travelers. And practically everything was on fire. It looked like it would take days for her to sort out, maybe longer with her nearly empty source. So it was fortunate that she had brought some help. Leah signaled Indiriel, who bellowed his orders in a voice that cut even over the endless thunder of the battlefield. Tartarus! Forward! Indiriel called, and men and women in the armored uniforms of Tartarus stepped forward. Their outfits were marked in places with red and gold, to helpfully distinguish them from the enemy, for the benefit of those without extensive battle experience. Each of them held a silver key, and at another command from Indiriel, they all summoned something. Some called armor, others weapons, others relentless forces of implacable steel. Still others summoned automatons that crashed across the field, crushing anything that didn't explicitly wear a Damascan uniform. An Endros lightning worm crawled sinuously through the air over her head, letting out a roar that could be heard even over the percussive thunder of combat. It shot a massive blast of lightning down to the ground, dangerously close to where she was standing. Then, Indiriel was there. He simply raised one hand, catching the bolt on a ghostly green gauntlet that he all of a sudden seemed to be wearing. The lightning shattered into a million sparks, damaging nothing but Leah's vision.
"Do something about that,"
Leah ordered, practically screaming to be heard over the noise. Indiriel grinned. "Don't worry," he called back. "I know a specialist." He put two fingers to his lips and whistled. Seconds later, a man in a brown cloak materialized seemingly out of nowhere. At first, she thought the cloak was spattered with mud. Then she reminded herself where she was. The man in brown, presumably Dinner Weeks, the Vallenhall traveler she had met earlier, said something. Indiriel smiled and pointed up. Dinner looked at the lightning worm wheeling overhead for another pass, and his shoulders slumped. He let out a heavy sigh. Leah took the opportunity to look around the battlefield. Most of the Enosh travelers were already dead or fled, with most of the summoned creatures seemingly under control. But every few seconds, another peal of what sounded like thunder crashed through the air. Where was that coming from? Behind her, one of her travelers let out a curse and pushed her to the ground, pressing down on her with his entire weight. From underneath him, she peered out to see an Endros traveler slaughtering his way through Damascan soldiers and travelers alike. He held a sword in each hand, with a thunderstorm spinning over his head, occasionally spitting lightning. She couldn't help but stare for a second. She had been taught that the second an Endros gate got out of a traveler's grip, it would run out of control and explode. How was he doing that? Then again, it didn't matter now. She shoved the well-meaning traveler off her, resolving to learn his name later. He had, at least, acted in an attempt to save her life, and strode toward the rampaging traveler. When he saw her in her red and gold dress, wearing a ruby circlet on her head, he smiled and turned toward her. His eyes blazed with bloodlust, and he pointed one sword at her in such a way that she knew a bolt of lightning would follow. She didn't give him a chance. Summoning the last of her source, she encased the man in solid crystal. He froze there, trapped in white crystal, an insane snarl on his face and his sword pointed at her. Above him, his thunderstorm gate exploded into harmless sparks and light. "Who was that?" Leah asked, though she doubted anyone heard her. The sound of rolling, crashing thunder had, for the moment, stopped. Had that been the sound from this traveler's gate? Probably not, since it had sounded more distant than that, but she couldn't be sure. She turned to ask someone when she heard a stentorian roar. "Ragnaros!" a man shouted, with all the fury of a volcano. She turned toward the sound, instinctively reaching for her empty source. From far back in the camp, all the way down the rows of tents, maybe 200 paces away but getting closer very quickly, the Vallenhall incarnation was running toward her. He was only a blur, a barest hint of shape, but the flickering gold and silver of his sword and the hatred in his voice, even the speed at which he was moving, meant he couldn't be anyone else. Leah almost panicked when she realized she was out of power in Lyriel, but she mastered herself and focused her mind on the ruby in her crown. The crown was always her fallback card, her last desperate trump, but she wasn't at all sure whether it would work on an incarnation. The Tartarus travelers around her formed up into a defensive ring, but Leah wasn't at all sure that the incarnation wouldn't carve his way through them on his way to her. Valen was almost upon them when Indiriel appeared out of nowhere, his chipped sword held in both hands. He caught the incarnation's first blow on his sword, preventing him from killing the front rank of travelers. But the sheer force of the blow carried Indiriel backwards, almost to Leah's feet, as if one hit from the incarnation carried the force of a club-wielding giant. The air around her erupted into steel, as every Tartarus traveler unloaded everything he or she had prepared. Showers of needles, spinning blades, flesh-hungry beasts of razor-sharp metal, even tornadoes of broken glass tore into the world at the same point, shredding the incarnation to ribbons. At least, that's what should have happened. The incarnation strode through the attacks covered in what looked like paper cuts. With his blade, he skewered a Tartarus traveler through the heart, while his other hand shot out to crush the skull of a steel creature that looked like an armored bear. It whimpered as it died. And the incarnation walked on, his terrible eyes focused on Leah. She stood her ground, rousing the power of her crown to wakefulness, and spoke the words that would bind him to her will. She got as far as opening her mouth, when another black-cloaked figure stood in front of her, back to her, sword to the incarnation.
Simon, she thought. What is Simon doing here? He's going to get himself killed.
Then both he and the incarnation blurred forward, and they clashed in a battle she could barely see. She could feel it, though, like wind pressed against her face. Two nearby men burst into sprays of blood from blows that Leah never saw. Indiriel rose to his feet and pushed her backwards, hands gripping her upper arms, practically carrying her away from the battle. The noise was deafening. Now, at least, she knew where that sound had been coming from.
"Is that Simon?" Leah asked, as soon as she could make herself heard.
"I'm afraid it is," Indiriel responded.
"Help him," she ordered, wrenching herself free of his grip.
"I would, if I could," he said. He glanced back at the fight. One of the forms was launched into the distance by a blow that sounded like the earth being struck by a meteor. Simon stood looking up, a mask on his face, cloak settling around him. He traced the falling incarnation's arc for a moment, and then streaked off to meet him.
"You've got about 2 minutes left of this," Kayla said, "before you die, go insane, or merge with the incarnation, or whatever it is that happens when two Valenhal incarnations exist at the same time. Personally, I think you'll turn into a sofa."
Simon could feel chains wrapping his shoulders, squeezing his ribs, even sliding around his neck in a sensation that reminded him of being attacked by the Nye. Kayla assured him that if the chains wrapped fully around his neck, he would reach incarnation. The problem was that this wasn't working. He couldn't stop long enough to open a gate. Whenever he tried, the incarnation would either rush him or start attacking someone else.
"The only other alternative is killing him," Kayla said. "Someone else is then open to replace him, but it's better than nothing."
Simon swept Azura toward the incarnation, only to be turned aside by Mithra. They clashed in a flurry of blows that left the rock of the plateau gouged and shattered, and Simon managed to disengage. He left a single slash across Valen's forearm. It dripped blood for a moment. The drops hung oddly in the weird, frozen world of the Nye essence, and the edges of the wound quickly began drawing together.
"And how do you recommend we do that?" Simon asked. "He heals too fast." "That's a great question," Kayla said. "It's too bad you don't have a cursed sword that leaves deadly wounds, one that you know Valenhal has a hard time healing."
"I would have expected that level of sarcasm from Otoku, not you."
"Tick-tock," Kayla responded.
"Talos' sword might work," Simon supposed. It was certainly worth a shot if he could even find it and reach it before the chains completed their circuit and he spontaneously combusted, or whatever dire fate awaited him. So where had he left the sword?
"I'll guide you," Kayla said. "Follow my lead."
Valen had regained his feet and was holding his blade in both hands, waiting for Simon to attack. Simon gathered himself up as if to rush forward. Then, on Kayla's direction, he turned and ran away. Leah and Indiriel had barely watched Simon dash off into the distance before a weak, wheezing voice called out from nearby.
"Say what you will about us," he said. "We know how to pick our students."
The voice sounded strangely melodic, as though the speaker were more used to singing than speaking. Indiriel's head jerked around, and he scanned the area quickly before spotting what he was looking for. Leah followed his gaze to a man lying on the ground nearby. A white-haired man, covered in blood, with a blue-dressed doll clutched to his chest.
"Master Kai?" Leah asked.
Indiriel went to one knee beside his fellow Valenhal traveler. "What's wrong with you?" he asked. Kai smiled and looked at Leah.
"Your brother's sword has quite the bite," he said.
Indiriel winced. "Ragnaros. Well, don't worry about it. We'll get you into the pool." Kai held up an empty water skin, of all things, shaking it in Indiriel's face.
"I've done everything I can do," Kai said weakly. "I want to hang on until I see Valen fall. It's my fault. Just let me stay here and watch."
Indiriel nodded and rose to his feet. For a moment he closed his eyes. Then he raised his blade and began to slice open a gate in midair. "Wish denied," Indiriel responded. "I'm getting you in that pool if I have to drown you in it."
"I've tried that, Indiriel," Kai responded. "Don't worry about me. I'm at peace."
Ostentatiously, Indiriel rolled his eyes and seized Kai by the scruff of his neck. It was like watching a 12-year-old deal with a little brother. "Listen to me, you coward," Indiriel said. "You are not going to run from this. If you try and hide in death, so help me, I will go before the Maker himself and drag you back." Kai made a choking noise that could have been because he had nothing to say, and could have been because Indiriel was actually choking him. Indiriel walked through the Valenhal gate, dragging the white-haired swordsman behind him. "This time, you're not strong enough to stop me, so get used to the idea of living again."
"Hey," a woman said, directly into Leah's brain. "Don't leave me here."
It sounded like a girl trying to talk through a chorus of distant whispers. Indiriel froze.
"Did you hear that?" Leah asked.
The overlord looked down at the grass, where the doll in the blue dress had tumbled free from Kai's grip. It was face down in the grass, its bonnet askew.
"Yes, you did. You can hear me, I know you can. Pick me up, take me with you. Simon needs me here, and I certainly don't want to rot here in the dirt."
Hesitantly, Leah reached down and scooped up the doll in her arms.
"You're one of Simon's dolls, right?" Leah asked.
"You can talk?" Indiriel demanded.
"You know better than that, Indiriel," the doll said testily. "Simon, left, over here. I know you understand me, so get over here."
Leah traded glances with Indiriel.
"They were my advisors," Kai responded weakly. "You knew that."
With one hand, Indiriel held Kai up by his collar. With the other, he pointed accusingly at the doll. "We thought they could only talk to you. If they could talk to anyone, why didn't they? Do you know how often they would have come in handy?"
"Perhaps they like me best," Kai responded. His voice was growing weaker.
Indiriel cleared his throat. "Well, never mind. Maker, I swear you're just stalling me here so that you can bleed to death. Doll's all yours, Leah." He dragged Kai inside Valenhal, and the gate shut behind them. Leah looked down at the doll in her hand.
"You can call me Kayla," she said cheerfully. "We'll talk later. For now, I've got to keep Simon alive."
Simon arrived a moment later in a rush of speed, his cloak snapping like a flag in the wind as he came to an abrupt stop. Seeing Leah, he reached up to take off his mask.
"Stop!" Kayla shouted. "You know what happens when you take off the mask. You have to keep it on as long as you can."
Simon lowered his hand and looked at Leah through the slits the mask left for eyes. The odd thing was, she couldn't see his eyes through the mask, only a sort of dim, sourceless light. It was quite intimidating, actually.
"Leah, where's your brother's sword?" Simon asked.
his voice echoed strangely behind the mask.
"I'm looking for him myself," she responded.
"The whole area has been destroyed," Kayla put in. "I'm not sure I would recognize the place where we left him."
"Well, we'll have to look.
There are about 65 swords lying on the ground nearby, so you'll have to split up."
Kayla directed Leah and Simon separately as they combed the area for fallen swords. Simon covered about 3 times as much ground as she did, blurring with speed so that he had searched almost the entire clearing in a handful of seconds. Still, she was the one to find the sword. The Ragnaros blade seemed to call to her, like a man moaning in pain just out of hearing. She found it on the edge of what used to be a tent, underneath a collapsed cot. A single crimson edge peeked out from under a bedsheet. The sheet itself was soaked in blood, and steady drops of red wet the grass leading away. Had Talos crawled away? She couldn't imagine him leaving the sword behind unless his life was in grave danger, even though he had other weapons he could call. The sword was by far his favorite.
"Simon," Kayla called from within Leah's arms, "while you were playing around, we found it."
First, Simon was searching the tents on the opposite side of the clearing, and then he was here, pulling the cot off the red-bladed sword. Reaching down, he hefted the sword in his left hand, holding his own enormous blade in his right, Leah's arms.
"While you were playing around, we found it."
First, Simon was searching the tents on the opposite side of the clearing, and then he was here, pulling the cot off the red-bladed sword. Reaching down, he hefted the sword in his left hand, holding his own enormous blade in his right. "Will this work?" he asked.
"Make it work," Leah said.
She winced at the chill in her tone and tried to backtrack. She didn't want to sound ungrateful.
I mean, you've done great work for the country, Simon. Don't give up now."
For a moment, Simon shook. She couldn't see his face, but she was sure that behind the mask, he was laughing at her. Simon cleared his throat. "Thanks, Leah," he said. His voice was entirely serious, perhaps too serious. While Leah was still trying to decide whether to be offended, Kayla cut in.
"It's not chatting time," she said. "You have 1 minute until insanity and death."
"Right," Leah agreed, glad to change the subject. "Get out there and finish the job." Simon shook his head, leaping away with a sword in each hand.
"I like you, Eris," Kayla said happily. "Now straighten my bonnet."
"Thank you, talking doll. Now, what did you mean about insanity?" Simon ran through the camp, keeping an eye out for the incarnation. He almost tripped over the corpse of the huge flying snake from Endros, which had fallen across an entire row of tents. Briefly, he wondered who had managed to take the thing out of the sky, but that was idle speculation. Travelers had 1,000 different powers. He finally found Valen running through a squad of soldiers, leaving nothing but blood and body parts in his wake. Nearby, 2 tents were collapsing in on themselves, rearranging to form a sofa. Even some of the blood had started to stream together and solidify into something that looked like felt, forming a red carpet leading straight to the incarnation.
"Are you sure this will work?" Simon asked again. "No," Kayla said. "Now, stop asking."
"How much time left?"
Kayla hesitated.
"You probably don't want to know," she said.
Then Valen noticed Simon, and the battle resumed. Simon was no expert in fighting with his left hand, but Kai had forced him to train under all sorts of conditions, including with a sword in each hand. He may not have been the most coordinated, but at least he didn't cut his own arms off in the first second. The problem was the huge difference in size between Azura and Talos's red sword. The fact that Azura's blade stretched almost twice as long as the sword in his left hand meant that he had to fight one-handed most of the time, until momentum carried him close enough to the incarnation to strike with the red blade. Valen turned those strikes every time. Simon scored a few cuts on the first pass, but only with Azura.
"Why do you keep this up?" Valen asked, slipping under a cut from Azura and slapping Simon's other blade aside.
"You have nothing to gain from this," the incarnation went on. "Victory will earn you nothing. Damasca is evil. It should be destroyed."
"Strike while he's talking," Kayla said, and Simon hurled Azura skyward.
The incarnation's eyes flicked up, just for an instant, and Simon brought all his strength and speed to bear on a single rush forward, the Ragnaros sword clutched in both hands. He earned a single, shallow hit along the incarnation's ribs. Coming out the other side, Simon leaped up to grab Azura's hilt, landing with a sword once again in each hand. As soon as his feet touched the ground, he had to knock Mithra aside because Valen was coming at him furiously, his silver eyes blazing. The wound in his side bled freely. It didn't disappear, and red lines snaked their way out from the wound, infecting the incarnation's healthy flesh.
"It works," Simon thought triumphantly.
"Simon, you might want to hurry."
The chains had crept around almost his entire neck. Simon gathered up all his strength and speed, using Azura to knock the incarnation's blade aside, stepping in closer to strike with the Ragnaros blade. He stretched his steel and his nigh essence to the limit, even though they both should have given out long ago. Each blow he struck launched the incarnation's body over a tent or a group of soldiers, and Simon had to jump after him, continuing his relentless assault. He managed to score three more hits, one on Valen's arm, another across his opposite shoulder, and a third across his cheek. They seemed to do little but make him angry, but he was at least doing some damage. If he could keep it up, he might actually have a chance.
"Almost got it," Simon thought. "I can do this. Just a little more."
"No, Simon," Kayla responded. "Time's up."
The chains on his neck were squeezing now, pounding, in time with his heartbeat. He could barely breathe. But he was stronger and faster than ever. Even the Valenhal incarnation couldn't keep up with him. The feeling was breathtaking. More than ever, he felt invincible. If he lasted a few more seconds, he would be able to tear Valen into pieces.
"You don't have a few more seconds. Take it off."
Simon crashed Azura into Mithra, knocking the incarnation's blade aside. He couldn't take it off. Not yet. Not until he had defeated Valen. If he had a little more power, just a little more, and he could do this.
"How do you think Valen felt, Simon?" Kayla said. "This is what happened to him. Just a little more power. Just a little stronger."
Simon froze, almost taking a sword in the chest. Everything in him begged Simon to attack, to press his advantage, to overwhelm the incarnation while he had the chance. He looked into Valen's black eyes, gleaming with metallic silver, and at the chains wrapping the man's neck. Then he reached up and pulled off the mask. Instantly, the world lurched back into normal motion, and weakness seized his limbs, pulling him relentlessly to the ground. Valen's face was clearly, almost comically, confused.
"What are you doing?" he asked.
Simon didn't quite know himself.
"Trust me, Simon," Kayla said smugly. "I got this."
From the corner of his vision, Simon saw a flare of ruby light. Leah's voice, clear and commanding, echoed in the open air.
"Incarnation of Valenhal, you have slaughtered your way through my country for too long. In punishment for your crimes, I command you to drop your weapons and await execution."
Then, in a more normal voice, she added,
"Die, you monster."
A wave of red light swept across the field, seizing the incarnation in bonds of shining ruby. The light wrapped his limbs, pulling the sword from his hand, drawing him down to his knees. The incarnation screamed, straining against the power of the crimson vault. His feet dug into the ground, but he was still pulled to his knees. The red light wrapping his limbs looked almost like chains.
"Ragnaros!"
Valen snarled, pulling against the chains as if he meant to tear Lea apart with his teeth.
"I will bring an end to you! Do you hear me? I will free the world from you!"
Simon was shaking, rather unsteadily, on his feet. But he hadn't lost all his strength yet, and he was still holding the scarlet sword. Simon let Azura drop from his fingers, taking the Ragnaros blade in both hands. He didn't so much stab the incarnation as collapse on top of him, letting his body fall blade first as his strength left him. The red blade penetrated Valen's chest and drove into the dirt below. The incarnation's body twitched and writhed like an insect pinned to a board, his limbs jerking and scraping against the earth.
"I can do this," Valen whispered. "Don't worry. I can save you all."
Then he died. Simon lay on top of the wanderer's body, for the sole reason that he couldn't seem to move at all. Even moving air in and out of his lungs felt like more effort than his body could handle. He would have passed out, but somehow he felt too drained to do anything but stay awake. Lea walked over to him, kneeling to press two fingers to the incarnation's neck.
"How?
How?" Simon managed to say. Lea smiled at him and tapped her crown with one finger. Simon tried to smile back, but he wasn't sure if his face moved.
"Nice," he said.
She stood and walked away, almost entirely out of his view. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw her making urgent gestures to nearby servants and soldiers.
"I brought her," Kayla announced proudly.
"Why didn't you tell me?" Simon sent. He tried to crane his neck to see where Kayla was. Did Lea still have her? But he couldn't move.
"I didn't know if she would make it in time," the doll responded. "She can run quite fast, though. You should invite her to Valenhall."
"I would have died without her," Simon said. "You did a good job." Kayla made a sound that was almost like a purr.
"Good, good. Praise me more. Indeed, you would be lost without my wisdom and guidance."
"Indeed," Simon agreed. A pair of Damascan soldiers grabbed him, one under each shoulder, and lifted him into the air. He tried to stand, but his body responded like a rag doll, and he couldn't resist. Even his head lolled bonelessly on the end of his neck.
"Maker, this is embarrassing."
Lea ordered the soldiers around by clapping them on the shoulder, pointing, or making other signals. She didn't say a word. "Kayla, why isn't she talking?"
"I don't think she can," the doll responded. "Some side effect from her crown, probably. Ragnaros is like that."
"Power like that in exchange for losing your voice?" Simon asked. "That doesn't sound so bad."
"We don't know how long it lasts," Kayla pointed out. "And that might not be the only price."
Simon considered that, but it still sounded like a good deal to him. The two soldiers walked him over, maneuvering him toward a stretcher held by a pair of medics. Hopefully that meant he was on his way to get medical care, though he was sure that all he needed was a trip back into Valenhall. Not that he had the strength to open a gate at the moment. Another pair of heavy footsteps walked up behind him, accompanied by the sound of clanking armor. For some reason, those sounds alone filled him with dread.
"Uh-oh," Kayla said.
"What?" Simon asked. "What is it?" A gold light, like a second sun, shone from behind Simon. Then Alan's voice rang in his ears.
"Simon, What's going on here?
Chapter 22, The Crimson Vault. Alan had been on the verge of stepping into Ragnaros when he had a change of heart. Amid the sounds of battle, he had followed the Grandmasters through the Damascan camp to where Grandmaster Avernus claimed they would find Heir Talos. They had managed to evade the worst of the fighting, though they still had to deal with stragglers. One of the shadow men, like a phantom in black robes, had leaped at Alan, a black chain outstretched between its gloved hands. One blast of gold light had sent it flowing away like a serpent made of shadows and moonlight. Other travelers had contended with giant birds, fireballs, blasts of lightning, swarms of glowing wasps, and other, stranger threats, but they had suffered no casualties. Still, the constant attacks wore on them, and Alan thoroughly regretted his heavy armor. His knees groaned, and he began to think longingly of the bed he had left in Enosh. The worst, though, were the glimpses he would occasionally get of the battle between Simon and the Incarnation. A tent would explode, or a giant would fall in a spray of blood, and he would see them, two dark shapes battling in the ground or slamming into one another in the sky, swords flashing. Simon was working hard, fighting to slay the Valinhal Incarnation, and some little voice kept telling Alan that he should help. Finally, Grandmaster Avernus led them into a hollow surrounded by trees, far enough away from the Damascan camp that they wouldn't be seen. Talos was waiting for them, and he looked on the verge of death. A thick layer of blood matted down his curly golden hair. Someone had covered him in hasty bandages, as though he had run off before the healer had finished. Worst, by far, was his eye. A bandage covered the entire left half of his face, but a blood stain marked where his eye would have been. Alan wondered how the heir was even standing. Not that he looked unfazed. Talos stood hunched over in pain, his left hand resting against his forehead as though he were physically stopping himself from touching the remains of his eye. When he saw them approach, Talos straightened. The scabbard on his belt was empty, his sword missing.
"You took your time," he said. "Are there any Asphodel among you?"
One woman in a gray robe stepped forward.
"I am a Mistbinder only," she said. "I cannot offer you healing."
Talos spat on the ground at her feet, though that didn't seem to bother her.
"Where are the rest of your Asphodels?"
"Grandmaster Asphodel was killed in battle only last week," Grandmaster Avernus said coldly. "Most of our Asphodel travelers elected to stay behind, defending the city as she would have wished."
The heir let out a cold, harsh laugh.
"You're telling me you mounted an attack with no healers?"
Alan stepped forward.
"I wouldn't say that," he said.
A bloom of rose-colored light unfolded on his palm. Talos stepped forward eagerly.
"Heal me," he commanded.
Alan pulled his palm back.
"Where are your own surgeons?"
"Scattered," Talos snarled. "Probably dead. Those Valinhal travelers."
Grandmaster Naraka cackled, moving her way up to stand beside Alan.
"Your ambush didn't go as well as you expected,
"Enough talk."
Talos strode forward and grabbed Alan's gauntleted hand. When Alan's other hand came up, it was full of golden light.
"I will mend your wounds," Alan said. "Ask politely."
"We don't have time for this, Alan," Grandmaster Avernus snapped.
"I disagree. Ask me."
Talos's face twitched, and his eyes jerked from looking at the pale rose in Alan's hand to the sounds of battle coming from the Damascan camp. They seemed to be getting louder.
"I ask you humbly to please heal me," Talos choked out.
Alan let the rose light drift forward, sinking into Talos's chest.
"Was that so hard?"
he asked. Talos shook for a moment in uncontrolled spasms, the rose light glaring through his flesh. After only a few moments, the bleeding slowed, he breathed more easily, and his skin took on a healthier tone. A quick healing like that wouldn't restore him fully, Alan knew, and it certainly wouldn't give him back his eye. But it was a good start. Talos straightened, breathing quickly, and turned from Alan.
"Very good," he said. "Now, let's not waste any more time."
He put one hand out. The air began to swirl with red light as he began to open a gate to the Crimson Vault. Through the trees, Alan saw something furious and shining crash to the ground not 50 paces away. He thought he saw the Incarnation's gold and silver sword and the edge of Simon's black cloak. Curious, he walked closer, pushing some limbs out of the way. They were moving so quickly and covering so much ground that Alan could barely follow the fight, but it was clear Simon was winning. He held two swords now, and it looked like one of them was red. Talos's sword? How had he gotten that? Alan glanced back at the heir's empty sheath, and, despite himself, he grinned. He could only think of a few explanations for how Simon had ended up with the sword, and most of them were hilarious. Simon was pressing the Incarnation back hard, and Alan waited for the stroke that would send Valen's head rolling and mark Simon's victory. It was strange how he rooted for Simon. Technically, he supposed, he should be on the side of the Incarnation. But inside, he cheered Simon on. Then, without warning, Simon stopped swinging his sword. For an instant, both he and the Valenhall Incarnation stood still. And Simon pulled off his mask. Something was wrong, Alan knew it, and on instinct he stepped forward to help. Grandmaster Naraka seized his arm with her one remaining hand.
"Come along," she hissed.
Alan turned around to see the gate to the Crimson Vault fully open, with the Enosh travelers filing inside. It looked like a huge cave, with two red-burning torches to either side of a silver door. The ancient, bearded king carved into the doors seemed to glare straight at Alan. For a moment, Alan stood, torn between going to help Simon and walking in to Ragnaros. He agonized over the decision for a second or two before he realized that there was no decision at all. He had left Simon behind once. He wasn't about to do it again. Alan shook off Grandmaster Naraka and jogged through the trees, their branches scraping his armor. He wasn't sure what help he would be against the full power of an Incarnation, but he knew he could do something. In the distance, he heard a woman's voice. He couldn't make out the words, but she spoke with such absolute authority that he was sure whatever she said was of the utmost importance. It sounded almost like Leah's voice, but that was impossible. He had left Leah back in Enosh, safe in the Grandmaster's palace. A wave of crimson light washed over the entire scene, and Alan almost fell to his knees. The sheer power he sensed in that light, the total overwhelming sense of force, made him want to collapse. The Incarnation, he saw, felt the brunt of the attack. Chains of red light erupted from the ground around him, grabbing his arms and legs, pulling him down. And only an instant later, Simon fell on Valen's sword.